Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Progress, only thing that'll last.
3005, the year that we fear, only God will survive.
So we haven't, on this show, really dug into maybe the only relevant question surrounding this Astros season going forward. Whether it happens this season or when what feels like the inevitable change in GM, whether it happens after that, when the Astros may pick a different man or woman to run their organization, as far as baseball decisions are concerned. We haven't dug into the question of, should Yordan be an Astro beyond, forget about, maybe he lasts through the season until they make a change at GM. Should he be an Astro beyond this year? I don't know if there's any other relevant question regarding this team. Maybe I feel this way after they lose 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati. Maybe it's because of that. Maybe it's because of the, in totality, of the 41 games that have been played and they have the worst record in baseball. Well, they're tied for the most losses in baseball. The Mets have lost as many, but haven't won 16. They've only won 15 because they've only played 40 games. So the Astros are amongst the dregs of baseball. They didn't get any help from Cam Smith over the weekend. Eric Geddy was well on his way to maybe getting another quality start in, and then Cam Smith drops an easy fly ball in right field that leads to a bases loaded situation. It starts a Reds rally. They go on to win the game. Cost Eric Geddy a win and a quality start. It was the game on Saturday. They get shut out yesterday. They lose 2 out of 3 as Wei Tang was out there pitching, and it didn't go well when he was in his role as maybe an opener. And so it's 2 out of 3 that they lose to the Reds, one of the worst records in baseball, most losses, tied for most losses in baseball. So I asked this question of you, Sean, because we've touched on the Yordan thing, and he's a great player, but is it just about vibes that people don't want Yordan traded? I've not heard like a real logical explanation for not trading him. I've heard, hey, what if the Astros turn it around? They get Hunter Brown back. They're only a couple games out of the division, now 5.5. They're only a couple games out of the wild card. I think it's either 3.5 or 4. I've stopped checking. I'm just being honest. I stopped checking. But
120 games left.
Yeah, understood. But I heard Chandler Rome and Tyler Stafford on the Crest City Territory podcast discuss a scenario where Hunter Brown comes back, Josh Hader comes back, and they're still in the race. So maybe we shouldn't be all out on the season. And no offense to those guys, they have a lot of Astro stuff to discuss. They have to get into these scenarios, but honestly, it is the hope of a delusional fan to have a discussion about, well, what if this happens? Well, Hunter Brown's one man. Is Hunter Brown going to save us from when he goes six and then the bullpen has to come in. Arrighetti can't avoid Cam Smith screwing up and costing him a win. There's a lot that's wrong with this team, and Hunter Brown ain't saving it. And hoping that the rest of the division or the wild card race is so terrible that you can stay in it, fine. But that ain't a way to build a baseball team. That ain't a way to look to the future. So I'll reiterate my question. Is simply having Yordan around about the vibes? Because, hey, look, it's fun to watch him hit. It's a joy to watch Yordan at the plate, because what else do you have to offer? The thought of doing a trade where you bring in young players who wouldn't even be someone you get to watch unless you care about Corpus Christi or Sugarland or single A ball, that sucks. Yordan gone. You got a bunch of young guys you don't expect to contribute for several years. But once again, that's not a proper way to run a baseball team, to do it on vibes. So what's the path forward? Because if I thought they would re-sign Yordan, I'd be willing to sit through him being great and the team sucking, because he's going to be around for 5-6 years after his contract is up. By the way, his contract's up 2 years after this. So that may give some people some pause. Hey, Yordan's going to be around. Why are we pretending like he's immediately going to be gone? Let's make moves to make this team better. That requires spending money. And in some cases, lots of it on star players, which the Astros don't develop anymore. So they would have to go out and spend the money on them, and it's not something they've been willing to do. Where are we at, Sean? Is keeping Yordan about vibes? Is there a baseball reason to keep him around?
Yeah, I think it was just like, hey, it's still early in the season. Like, let's not everyone lose their minds. And also, like, if they are going to make a trade, it won't be until June in the earliest. That's just kind of when trade season really starts. So there's a little bit of like, yeah, just would bum everyone out if on April 30th we're just like, hey, you know the guy who's having like an all-time great season?
Type season, yeah.
What if we trade him and make this disaster year even sadder? So I do think it was, at least for the like conversation-wise, and honestly for like the real, you know, Dana Brown in an office reason of like, it's a disastrous, whatever, 25 games, 30 games, now 40 games. It still is only, whatever, 35, 25 disastrous games. Once you get to like 40, 45, that's when you're like, all right, this, you know, the classic, was it, don't look at the standings until Memorial Day. It's like, oh, getting pretty close to Memorial Day. And it's not like you're just merely, you know, starting slow. You're one of the worst teams in baseball.
Yeah, the third worst run differential in all of baseball, despite what your offense was. Now, it's tapered off because no one expected them to be as good as they were to start the year. And some of that is they're coming back down to earth in some ways. But the pitching staff not regressing to the mean.
No.
I mean, Burroughs maybe, steady. You know, Arrighetti's been who he is. But overall, you're still as bad as you always have been as far as the staff is concerned. And maybe no more Ryan Weiss on the major league level will mean you will get better just by his absence. But,
ouch.
I mean, what's real is real. And him not being around. Yeah. Now, there's a chance the guys who replace him are worse.
Also bad.
It's just very difficult for me to imagine that there can be worse than him.
And eventually one of those guys will be Josh Hader. And eventually one of those guys will be Hunter Brown. So those innings at least will get better.
Yes, but for the guys who currently are taking up his spot, yes, there's a very real possibility he'll run some guys out there who struggle even more. I just would like to see it. I like
Give them the opportunity.
I would like to see those guys prove that they're as bad as Ryan Weiss, as opposed to letting him continue to roll out there. So he's now in Sugarland. We'll see if he comes back simply because he has to at some point. That has happened where guys just wind up back on the major league level because the Astros just need a guy for a night. So that could be a Ryan Weiss situation. But for now, he's safely tucked away in Sugarland, and we'll see how long he stays there.
Yeah, the Astros team ERA is 5.57. That's good for 30th in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
29th is 4.84.
So nearly a run difference, and it's the Rockies who play in that stadium.
An entire run difference.
And they have an excuse.
Yes. I mean, the Nationals, I'm about to call them the Wizards. Not that lucky. Nationals, 4.82. So right there with the Rockies. So, like, normal baseball, for normal baseball teams, you know, it's like 4.7, 4.8 is like really bad.
And the Rockies can kind of be classified as that, but they also play in a stadium that that balloons ERA. So it's even worse when you consider the Rockies wouldn't be as bad. Well, they were helped by you rolling in there and actually not being able to score runs against them somehow, some way, when they swept you. But
that series is the difference, basically.
Honestly, they scored a lot of runs. You went two games only scoring one run. So somehow, some way, the Rockies were able to shut you down, even in Colorado. So I get it. The vibes when he's up there, all the content that gets created, the videos that get made because Yordan hits a ball a really long way. I get people don't want to lose that. I just have not heard a legitimate baseball reason other than, you know what? They could turn it around.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, you don't want Dana Brown making the decision. That might be your most logical baseball reason for not trading him. You don't want the guy who feels like a lame duck making the move. Other than that, I have not heard one other than, hey, it's a great hitter. I think Art chimed in and said, hey, look at who we traded for the Mets. I mean, excuse me, who we traded to the Mets for Justin Verlander. Those guys have not really become anything. Let's win now. I would agree with you, Art, and others, if the Astros had any inclination of making moves, that would help them win now. Even if it's not this year. Lost year, okay, fine. If they want to look at it that way. I doubt that they do, considering it's their baseball people and it's 41 games in. But even if they got to mid-June and go, okay, this is a lost year. We're not going to make any moves to stay in the race or try to stay in the race. Would they do anything significant to change the complexion of this roster in the offseason by spending what I would say is lots of money that is beyond what they're normally willing to spend to improve the roster? And there are more ways to get better than just simply spending a lot of money on free agents. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Speaking of a conversation we had about Rendon and the Angels, while I was joking about it, the Angels spent a lot of money, and they've done that over the last decade, and it has not come to anything. So that is not the way to go about it all the time. But I just don't see a way forward because I don't see any young players showing themselves for this Astro team, making them a better team next season.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll simply be they get better luck, which has not been the case with injuries over the last 3 or 4 years. I just don't know where the elite or top of the rotation stuff is coming from other than Hunter Brown, which would certainly change their fortunes if it happened either the rest of the year this year, if we think Eric Geddy and Peter Lambert. Peter Lambert becomes your third guy. Fine. I would love it because it'd be fun considering where he started this year and the fact that he's nearly 30 and this would be his first really legitimate early significant contribution to a team that's winning. I don't see it. But if it happens, I would applaud Lambert and Murphy because Miller is in Pittsburgh changing their staff's fortunes, right?
I think so.
Josh Miller in Pittsburgh. Murphy remains here.
Okay.
That's
got the short end of that one.
So far.
Through
41 games so far.
Yeah, just based off of that. I don't really need to see what the Pirates are doing.
I went through it. They're at last check, which is Friday, they were like top seven in all like pitching stats.
Okay.
Much better than the Astros, as you laid out. Their ERA is 30th. Team ERA is 30th. So, yes, the Murphy stuff hasn't been great. Nothing's been great. And it continued in Cincinnati over the weekend as they dropped 2 out of 3. So I think the Yordan conversation will continue. I don't believe he gets traded. I just don't think they have the stomach for all that, particularly not in the season. You can't trade Yordan quietly. But if they had their way, I think they would wait to the end to after the season's over where they really wouldn't have to answer questions about it. It's not something that I don't think it's something they want to get into. Particularly with lame duck manager and lame duck GM as part of the equation.
That's part of it. It's like Dana Brown might be maybe not the last person to accept that it's time to do it. But during the season, he's probably thinking most of all, I need to save my job.
I got to find a way to save my job.
I do, like, the season better turn around or else I'm not the one trading Yordan Alvarez in the offseason. Yeah. So, like, for him, it's the most non-starter.
He would have to be told to do it.
Yeah, it's, like, the most, like, non-starter can possibly be because I trade Yordan Alvarez and I get fired anyway.
Even if I make a great trade, maybe I'll be remembered fondly 4 or 5 years from now, but it don't help me now. So why would I do it?
Whatever, for 21-year-olds. You know, like, who cares?
So some of this was prompted by Bob Nightingale's report that the Astros, if they did make a trade, although Yordan, at this point, not on the market, could get a Juan Soto-like haul, which is what the Nats made the trade, because they could not sign Juan Soto. They wanted to. He did not take their offer. He gets traded to the Padres. They get a giant deal. And that deal wasn't even the completion. That wasn't the complete thing, because they traded one of the guys they got for Juan Soto, Mackenzie Gore, to the Rangers for even more prospects. So you can see how this deal could compound when you trade a player of Yordan's caliber if you decide to make another move. So we will see at some point if the Nationals made out. They got a couple good players on their roster now, and that might be enough to say good move. We'll see what they get for trading Mackenzie Gore for other players if it all turns out to be the building blocks for a Nationals revival.
Yeah, but the thing is, it still could be a building block for the Nats coming back. This trade happened in August of 2022.
And they're bad.
So it's like,
how long does it take?
Yeah, this was, you know, you trade one of these guys, and it can even be a haul that's deemed like, oh, this was an impressive trade haul. Best you could ask for, trading one of these guys.
And what does it mean for you?
Still don't make the playoffs in 4 years.
Yeah. That is the other side of the coin, where you go, hey, look at all the good young players we got. Even if you put like a Herschel Walker Cowboys heist against the team you trade Yordan for, would it be the same impact as the trade that the Cowboys made? Unlikely, because it's a heist for a reason. It's a trade that gets talked about and will continue to get talked about for a reason. But even if you did what the Nationals did and seemingly get two young players who can be good major leaguers, what does it mean for your team? And then you're thinking, we could have had Yordan for a couple years, even if he does just walk away. Even if it is just about the vibes. All right, we'll go to break. I don't see it happening. I don't think their Astros are in any real position to do it because of the flux as far as some of their decision makers. And I think we'll just get to enjoy Yordan being a great player on what looks like a really bad baseball team all year long, which might be enough for people. At least you have something to watch.
It does make the game more watchable. That's like, hey, I know I get four Yordan at bats.
Yeah, he may do something pretty special. And I think you can hope and pray that he is so good this year that he defies the odds. He goes and wins an MVP on a team who, I don't know, could lose 100 games.
Yeah.
Cool.
Where are they at right now?
I mean, 16-25, 41 games in.
I'm trying to do the percentage of what that is.
I mean, it's high 90s. Is that what it is right now?
I think so. 39 win percentage? Yeah, that's... You're looking at 100 losses.
I mean, even Trout's team got the 70 wins. 72, I think, when he won an MVP on a really bad baseball team. I don't know that a 100-loss team has ever produced an MVP. I believe that's not the case. So I'm not predicting 100 losses. I actually would only want to see it to see if Yordan could be so good that it'd just be undeniable. Hey, we know this team is one of the historically bad teams in baseball history, but he's too good not to give it to him. See how baseball would contend with that.
Not for the Astros.
The Astros don't have that type of goodwill that Yordan would somehow win an MVP.
Or even just neutral will, like the Angels.
No one really hates the Angels or cares about them, so they're willing to give Trout. He's great. Let's give it to him.
Yeah, we love that movie.
I just don't know.
With the arms. Yeah,
I don't know that Yordan has that type of a goodwill, and not because of him. It's simply because of the franchise he plays for. All right, we'll go to break. We'll move on to something I got inundated with, and maybe you did too. It was a lot of people I did not know who covered the Spurs talking about the Spurs online last night because of what happened in Game 4 of that series where the Wolves evened it up, thanks in large part to Wimby not being able to control his emotions. And when a guy elbows another guy in the head and gets thrown out of a game, normally you don't get the type of defense for this guy that Wimby got, but when you're a superstar and generally likable, it happens. And I wish people would just say that. We'll get into why it might have went down, but I wish people would stop with the long explanations of how he's been beat up physically and just say, I like Wimby. He's a cool player. I'd rather have him in the game than not. That would be honest and simple, because I don't think you'd be talking about Luke Kornet in the same way. If Luke Kornet had elbowed Naz Reid, these long Twitter posts about, hey, look how they're treating Luke Kornet out there, we would not hear. He'd be like, well, Luke Kornet lost his cool. Maybe we see him in game 5. Maybe we see him in game 6. Instead, we got what we got last night. We'll talk about that. We'll hear from the Spurs head coach, Mitch Johnson. He has some thoughts. And I'll ask Mitch Johnson a question that he won't hear when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So in the NBA yesterday, the Sixers get embarrassed in their own building, run off the court. Tyrese Maxey talked about how the Knicks fans took over. You had prominent Knicks fans behind the Knicks bench as that game was getting away. It was a celebration for the Knicks as they make a second consecutive Eastern Conference Finals. It's a tough look when Josh Hart can say, I thought Philly was a sports town after the game because the Knicks fans take over that building. You had your best player in Joel Embiid, when he's healthy and on the floor, say, before the series, hey, could we not do this? Can we not sell tickets to Knicks fans? I don't know if Sixers fans are actively selling tickets to Knicks fans, but it felt like it. And when you're down 0-2 coming home, you set yourself up for what happened, where you tried in game 3, you couldn't get it done because you couldn't make jump shots late. And then game 4 was a runaway. I think the Knicks at one point made 9 out of the first 10 threes, and that was all. And we go from Daryl Morey and Nick Nurse being fine after winning game 7 to reporting out of Philly saying their status will be evaluated. That happened all in 9 days. The euphoria of beating the Celtics on the road in Boston, you don't even get to come home and celebrate. Yeah. Because you got to go to New York. And by the time you get back home after beating the Celtics, you've lost 2 to the Knicks. Joel Embiid's already missed the game in the series. And now everyone knows your season's probably over, and now we got questions about the entirety of your build if you didn't have those questions already.
And it's one of my favorite things where a coach, GM, whatever, goes from, you know, hot seat or hot seat-ish to job has been saved to actually, no, never mind. We still need to evaluate this. This is concerning. Yeah, I mean, and to do that in basically a week is just insane.
A little over a week. No.
It's just insane to, like, only the Philadelphia 76ers can provide that kind of, emotional yo-yo torment to their fans.
And not even really
salute to them, though, for losing by 30.
Except in game 2, where the jump shots didn't fall. They tried their best in game 3, but could not score enough, and the Knicks just kind of batted them away throughout that fourth quarter.
This is a very classic sweep where it's like, yeah, one team's obviously better the first 2 games. You get a great effort in game 3, but yeah, it's ultimately not enough. 30-point loss in the afternoon.
Yeah, game 4, it's like, you know what? We're out of here.
Game 4, boom,
I think
later.
Bomani Jones asked, do they have, like, direct flights from Philly to Cancun? Is that what's going on? He said something much funnier, but it was in that way that, hey, yeah. I mean, are
they
we
don't want to waste any time.
Yeah. Is that why they're giving up 9 out of 10 made threes in the first quarter to the Knicks? So that happened. You have Knicks fans taking over Philly and celebrating their win, which, you know what? Yeah, he goes, they must got a direct from Philly to Cancun leaving tonight. And that's why that game went the way that it did. And you know what? If it wasn't happening to Philadelphia fans, I would not enjoy Knicks fans being thrilled. But because it's Philly, fine. We'll allow it.
I allow just free purge rules when it comes to any combination of Philly, Boston, New York playing each other.
Yeah, whatever happens.
Figure it out amongst yourselves. Yeah, I kind of hate all of you. I don't care.
The Celtics blowing a 3-1, great. That's awesome. Then the Sixers in the next series not winning a game and the Knicks blowing them out in their own building, great. There is not a fourth team. There's no square, so the Knicks losing to the Pistons or the Cavs, it doesn't hit the same. But I'll take a Knicks loss in the conference finals. That'll be cool.
I mean, it would literally be what happened last year where it's like...
I mean, if the Pacers were still eligible, that would be the best way for it to go. And the Pacers...
They're running in, whatever, Rick Carlisle with the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Pacers
were to cash this in.
We're not involved because they're hoping to tank, and they did, but they did not get a pick because it was protected top four, and it wound up being five. So the Clippers, who owed a pick to the Thunder, don't have that pick jump into the top four. They get a pick of their own because of the Zubac trade. And now they have a top five pick, and who knows who that could be. Could be Acuff, could whoever, whatever. They went out, and the Pacers GM apologized to their fans for taking the gamble and it not working out. And we're talking about it during during News of the Weird, or maybe right before. Sean and I were like, there's some conversations for people defending the trade. If you don't know, it was Benedict Mathurin and stuff, like two first-round picks plus other stuff, to the Clippers for Zubac, who will be part of the Pacers team next year as they hope to get back to their heights of the 2024-25 season where they made the finals thanks to Tyrese Halliburton's run. Of course, Halliburton wasn't available this year. He gets hurt in Game 7 of the finals, has the Achilles tear, and dealt with a lot of things this year from shingles, among other things. And the assumption that this Pacers team is just going to be right back to where they were just because Halliburton's healthy. I mean, we don't know how he's going to look coming off an Achilles. They also were like the four seed the year they made the finals. They had a great run. Giannis and the Bucks were banged up because Dame tore his Achilles going into those playoffs. So they had an advantage there. And while the Knicks were taking apart the Celtics, anyway, Jason Tatum tears his Achilles. They faced the Knicks team who was banged up. So a lot of things went their way. And then they pushed, credit to them, pushing the Thunder to seven. But the thought that the Pacers are just going to be right back to form is supposed to be some type of cushion for the Zubac trade. And hey, I know you lost out on a top five pick, but you're going to be great. I don't know that. I think that's a big assumption to make. The question is, do you think a top five pick is worth more than adding a guy who's never been an all-NBA player on any level? He made an all-defensive like second team once, but I think Zubac's contributions have been greatly exaggerated. We will see what he looks like in that pace and space style in Indiana.
Because it feels like if you kept your number five overall, like you keep your pick, it ends up being number five. Like you get the same amount of luck.
Yeah.
That like number five, Benedict Mathurin, you know, the pick, 2029 pick that he traded for Zubac. And maybe throw in another pick or two. And
you could have acquired a star.
You can go like Giannis level with
that. If you wanted to,
Like that's the surprising thing. I don't know if Milwaukee would trade, whatever, Tim to Indiana because they get weird about that kind of stuff. But there is like you traded the number five overall pick for Ivica Zubac. Like, we all love Ivica Zubac. But like,
what do we mean?
It's a little steep, I'd say.
Yeah. And an unprotected 2029 pick. Yeah, it's a lot for a center who's been good. People may love him, but, you know, I mean, he's fine.
He's fine, yeah.
He's a good player, but that's about it.
And in the East, like, there's almost like, I get you can't actually think this way, but in the East, it feels like all the good teams, all the teams that before the season, you're like, this team can contend in the East. This team should, frankly, contended the East. Like, every year, one of those teams loses in the first round, loses in the second round. So it's like, it is such a just kind of random number generator of like, oh, I guess it's the Celtics this time. Or they're going to walk through the entire East playoffs. Or they're going to lose in the first round after being up 3-1. Yeah. Or the 8-seed Miami Heat are going to make a run. Or the 5-seed Indiana Pacers. Like, there's always just like a randomness to the Eastern Conference playoffs, which the Pacers are a part of. But the it's like, I don't know if you really need a stock up for like making a run in the East. It just kind of feels like you can keep making minor tweaks and eventually make your way there. Like the Knicks were thinking about blowing this thing up, and now they have like a really flat runway to the East Finals, and or they're already in the East Finals, maybe the Finals.
Yeah. So
Cavs, another one, made it all in type of mood, trading for Harden. It's like,
yeah, part of that is, you know, Darius Garland was unavailable, and they were worried about that, so they make a move. And you get that. trading for James Harden's a different conversation, although James Harden on Saturday made all the big shots. Give him credit for that.
Haters wrote him off. He didn't write back.
Cool. And he did the whole thing where he was asked, hey, James, how did you tune out all the chatter?
What chatter?
Yeah.
He has no idea that people have questioned him through the first two games.
Doesn't got internet.
I mean,
Young Thug told us.
Credit. he did explain away a certain thing that he did with, hey, I don't think James has the internet.
He doesn't have the internet.
I do credit to Kenny Atkinson for, you know, hey, Duncan Robbins is out in the court. Let's isolate James on Duncan Robbins. And he made a couple big time shots, made a floater, and he did what he had to do. What they brought him in for was for moments like that. Of course, it wouldn't have been so desperate if he hadn't been so terrible in games one and two, but he found a way. So he gets his moment. They'll try to even the series, what, tonight. But the game we have not talked about is what, and the moment from the weekend beyond, you know, if you care about the lottery or the Wizards get the number one pick and the Jazz, maybe not DeBanza, but they wind up in the top five with the number two pick, was Wimby and the Wolves. And what I've seen so far, particularly from Spurs accounts, has been, hey, he's been treated unfairly physically. The referees haven't jumped in to protect him, so he had to protect himself. It is what his coach, Miss Johnson, said. In fact, let's hear from Miss Johnson, the young coach of the Spurs. Wimby hits Naz Reid with an elbow, gets him a flagrant two. He gets thrown out of the game. And certainly the conversation is about, hey, other guys who've done this, the blatant elbow to the head, missed time beyond the game they were thrown out of. We know the famously met a world peace, what he did to James Harden. Cost him, I think, games in the regular season and then a stretch into a game in the playoffs.
Seven-game suspension.
Yeah, seven-game suspension, six in the regular season, one in the playoffs. I think I saw a clip of, now this was another guy that doesn't have the status of Wimby, Hassan Whiteside elbowed a Spur, got him a game. This was way back when. So people are trying to find the correlations and the comparisons and saying, hey, if it happened to these guys, Wimby should take one as well, miss a game. That feels unlikely. And let's hear from Mitch Johnson, the Spurs coach, on the matter.
I just think that the amount of physicality that people play with him, at some level, you have to protect yourself. Every single play on every single part of the floor, people are trying to impose their physicality on him. I get it. We get it. That's part of the game. But at some stage, he's gotten chucked. He's gotten pushed down in transition, running freely, all the stuff. He doesn't complain one time. We don't complain because we're just going to play. We don't really give a shit, excuse my language. But at some stage, he should be protected. And if not, he's going to have to protect himself. And unfortunately, stuff like that happens.
You think in protecting himself, his reaction was in frustration?
No, I think it's in getting hit on every play. And so at times you have to create a lead, get a rebound, get a catch, try to stop them from scoring, protect the ball. And so it's gotten to the point I don't know what else to tell him. We've tried to give him fundamental direction on how to deal with it. And at times it seems like that's not enough.
By the letter of the law, I think the league is supposed to look at this tomorrow and decide about his status for the next game. Do you think there's any possibility that he should be suspended for the next game?
No. Again, I don't even know the legality or the rules, but there was zero intent. They did what they did because of the outcome of the play. So be it. But to have anything on top of that, I think would be ridiculous.
There was intent. Wimby eyed Naz Reid up and threw an elbow. I mean, that's the coach. Maybe he hadn't seen the replay. Whatever, but there's intent. He saw him there. He threw an elbow. So I'm not gonna pretend like Mitch Johnson has a leg to stand on there. Whether he gets suspended or not, that's a different question. There's no – people think there's like an automatic thing. If you get hit with the flagrant two, you get suspended for the next game. There's no automatic next game suspension. There's a fine for the flagrant two. I think more so for the ejection, you get the fine, $2,000 or whatever. And then the league reviews it. He's not getting suspended. It would be a giant shock.
It'd be crazy.
Considering the player, the 2-2 series, changing the complexion of a series. They will likely say, considering it happened relatively early, hey, that's enough.
Yeah.
It didn't happen late in the fourth quarter. It happened in the first half. That's enough. He's suspended. He'll get hit with a fine, and he'll come back. Wimby once the ruling came down, do you think he knew or was he pretending not to know that a flagrant two results in an ejection? He was talking to Harrison Barnes. He goes, flagrant two? Does that mean I'm ejected?
Yeah, he gives a, what's that mean?
Yeah, what's that mean? For a guy who knows a lot about a lot,
yeah,
Wimby will speak on a lot of things. He didn't know that that a flagrant two leads to an ejection. He didn't know that. I don't know what game he's playing, but I'm going.
Yeah,
to,
I don't know why he's. Lying
I don't know why.
This.
I don't know why he wouldn't know that. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he didn't know. Maybe in the moment he wasn't sure. Maybe he was surprised he got
he's
a flagrant
still
two.
Seeing red, blind with rage.
Perhaps, but I. But he did it on purpose. There was intent there. He wanted to throw that elbow. He wanted to connect where he connected. The question will be what the NBA does about it, and I think we all know the answer. He ain't missing Game 5. And if he does, it'd mean that Adam Silver actually did something as opposed to what he normally does and goes, eh, whatever.
Yeah, $50,000 fine.
Yeah. Knock him out of – hey, we'll take it out of his paycheck. Beyond that, the Wolves do tie the series, although the Spurs really gave him a game after Wimby went down. In fact, I think they were up by a – by eight in the fourth quarter. De'Aaron Fox hit a big three. Yeah. But the Wolves kept attacking the paint, and Luke Kornet was not going to hold up, and they found a way to even that series, and now they go back to San Antonio. I do hope going forward that people can recognize that if you like a player, just say it. Forget about the biased Spurs account talking about the assaults that Wimby is suffering, and that's why he did what
he
did.
He has been assaulted.
He's been assaulted, I know.
Now, on the flip side, my other favorite thing is if Wembanyama did that just out in the street, he would be charged with assault.
With assault, yes. You can't.
But yeah, but everything in sports,
yeah.
You'd be charged with assault if he did that.
I know that Naz Reid gave him a little shove running down the court, and Wimby fell over. I mean, there is some question, at least in my mind, about how big of a flopper he is. Because I know he's thin. I know he is a giant man.
Mm-hmm.
But Naz Reid just a little love tap, and he's just sprawling all over the floor. I mean, come on. You got to be a little stronger than that. I know.
That's what happens when you don't defend yourself.
And I long ago now, because our segments run long, before we got to this point of this segment, I asked a question, or at least I said I had a question for Mitch Johnson. Mitch Johnson's all about protecting Wimby, and if you don't protect him, he's got to take matters into his own hands.
Mm-hmm.
Sean, would you like to guess how many times Mitch Johnson's been ejected from a game for defending Wimby? Like getting on the rest for a non-call?
Oh, I don't know. Once? Twice?
Not only can I not find a time when he's been ejected in his this year or even last year when he was an interim. He hasn't been around a long time. He's gotten like three technicals over the course of his entire tenure with the Spurs. He is, as much as he may talk about how we've given Wimby the hopefully tools to help himself, how about you as a coach? Make a point at some point. You don't. Mm. It doesn't have to be in the playoffs. You don't want to be ejected from a playoff game. But if this is something that's been you guys have noticed all year long, and your players not being protected in the way you'd like, imagine that. Listening to a guy ask the referees to protect one of their players, it sounds a little soft to me. But beyond that, why don't you do something about it? Like apparently one of the reasons he's so well-liked there, and the Spurs are so well-liked in San Antonio, is they don't complain a lot about the referees as part of his ethos. Hey, we're not gonna be the team who complains. We're going to just take care of our business on the court. And he spoke to that in the press conference. But you know what? At some point, what are you doing to protect your player?
Yeah.
Perhaps you should make a little bit more of a stink about what's going on and not just in the media. I know Tony Brothers is a little confrontational. We found that out.
I get it.
Maybe you don't want to do the Tony Brothers, but perhaps at some point you make a statement and go, hey, we're not going to take this anymore. And like I said, it doesn't have to be here. You should have laid the groundwork at some point during the regular season as your guy, as you say, continues to get beat up and the calls aren't being made. At this point, it's too late.
Well, also at this point, yeah, we don't complain about the referees here. Sounds like you're complaining about the referees.
Well, not on the court, Sean.
Okay.
During a presser, once my guy gets thrown out of a game, I'm going to complain to the refs.
Sounds like that's what he's doing.
But on the court, we act a certain way. We just keep playing. Ignore what I'm doing now, is what he said. Don't acknowledge what I'm doing now, which sounds a lot like complaining.
Yeah, I mean...
And
this is just like
justifying my guy hitting a guy in the throat with an elbow.
Yeah.
I'll do that too.
But just like something that, like you said earlier, if Luke Kornet threw that elbow, no one would care. To the wall defending him.
No national writers who can't just come out and say, I love Wimby on the court.
Yeah,
I'd rather see
I am
play.
Less interested in this game if Wimbanyama is not on the court.
Wouldn't talk about, hey, he's been fouled a couple times. The referees blew it. they should have really done something about this before this happened. Just be honest with everyone. Stop playing in our faces. You'd rather have him on the court. Say you like him out there. Say it makes the game much more interesting if he's playing as opposed to not playing. Don't tell me about the mitigating circumstances that led to it, because as Luke Kornet, you don't have to be Luke Kornet. You wouldn't be defending Jaden Daniels like this. McDaniels, one of the best players in these playoffs. It's maybe Anthony Edwards gets this treatment. I don't know. Wimby seems like a guy who everyone loves, but this is the now he missed the game due to a concussion. You can't blame him for that. But this is the first black mark on Wimby's playoff resume, getting thrown out of a game where you could have gone up 3-1 in the series. And if the Wolves go on to win, even if you don't get suspended, how does getting thrown out of this game impact the rest of the series? And if they go on to win, that's one for Wimby. Every young player gets them. We know here in town, Jalen got his last year. Not that they're trading Wimby, but Jalen got his last year.
They should think about it.
To who? The Rockets?
The Rockets.
Yeah. Okay. Shingun caught his. All the young players get him. This is the first. Wimby, what are you doing? You can't get thrown out of a game.
Yeah.
Now, if he responds with 30, 10, and 11 in game five, which I expect him to plan, then all will be forgiven.
Is the 11 blocks? Is it 30, 10?
Yes.
10 rebounds,
yes.
11
blocks. He's already got double digits in blocks, despite Chris Finch saying four of them are like gold tens. He's already got a double digit block game in the series. Who's to say he doesn't come out with a vengeance?
Yeah.
But it's not to the throat of players. It's to putting them in the rim and blocking their shots. Who knows what'll happen? Got to stay on the court, though. Can't get thrown out of a game.
Yeah.
Oh, Naz Reid fouled you.
Yeah, yeah. Come on. You don't think Steph Castle's getting fouled, too? He's not throwing elbows to people's jugulars.
And Nate Duncan wouldn't defend Steph Castle like he defended Wimby. It was amazing to watch. Beyond the Spurs people who became a part of my timeline just because I typed in Wimby and I couldn't get away from Spurs accounts.
You watched three different angles of this video.
The Dylan Harper reaction's awesome. But what did it cost me? Now, what people won't point out is his mouth was a gate before the Wimby elbow. He was watching. I guess he took offense to how Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid were treating his guy. His mouth was already wide open, and then it stayed that wide once Wimby threw the elbow.
The expression changed.
Yeah, he's like, oh wow. So it was interesting last night. Series tied at 2. We'll see if the Cavs can do the same tonight. Maybe we'll get a couple long playoff series in both conferences, as the Knicks win, the Thunder on the verge of sweeping the Lakers. Look, Thunder versus whoever in the conference finals, that was already preordained. The question will be is, can the Spurs win, or can the Wolves, who aren't afraid of anyone, win and take on the Thunder? I think everyone wants, for the most part, they want Spurs versus Thunder, because mostly because of what happened in the regular season. They think that the Thunder have a real shot to lose against the Spurs. I don't know, man. 7-0 in the playoffs, looking to go 8-0. They look like a team that no matter who it is going to make their way to a final and win a second consecutive title. But maybe Wimby or the Wolves have a chance to stop them. I don't think the Knicks got a shot, and I don't think the Pistons do either. I think whoever wins the West is likely winning the title.
I think it's Thunder Spurs.
And
the title.
If the Wolves win somehow, then Thunder,
congratulations,
the Thunder will take them apart. Maybe Ant has a couple games, but they'll take them apart and win the title. The Spurs win, then we got a real shot for a non-Thunder title team. All right, we'll go to break. Hour one is done. If you want to join in, 713-780-3776 is the number. We will get to what Nico Collins said over the weekend. He was at a charity event helping the kids out in the community, and he talked about his long-term plan for the Texans. We know his deal is one that may be next, as they've paid Azeez Ostrayer, they pay Will Anderson. He may be the next guy who gets paid. We'll hear, or at least we'll talk about what he had to say when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it, but Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.